Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now I'm delighted to be joined by three brilliant minds who know how to find the funny in just about anything. They're sharp, they're quick, and they're guaranteed to give us a bit of a laugh. For this week's industry review, I'm thrilled to be joined by Julie J, with me here in studio all the way up from Dingle. Al Foran also joins us, as does Chris Kent. Julie, I'm going to start with you because, as I say, you've made the journey from Dingle this morning. The last time I spoke to you was about 5 years ago. You were just about to get married, and you... A lot has happened since then, including COVID and a whole lot of other things.
A lot has happened. Well, you'll be pleased to hear, Bobby, I'm still married.
Well, that's a plus. We're off to a great start.
And to the same guys. That's two green flags. So I'm very proud of that fact. So, yes, still married to my current husband. And I'm actually two kids later. Would you believe? I don't know when last I was talking to you. Were the
about
kids
5 years
on the
ago.
Horizon? So we're two kids later now. So it's just a madness.
Right. Now, I know you've gone back. Maybe explain how it all works, because the comedy circuit sometimes needs to be, I suppose, supplemented by other income. So tell me a little bit about your approach to that. I know you were originally a school teacher.
So I was originally a Moontour, which will surprise nobody because there's such a whiff of Moontour off me, isn't there? It's just my natural odour. I can't help it. So I did go back. Now, the comedy has been going great, but in terms of getting the mortgage over the line, obviously the scene has changed a lot. You know, I really miss the days. I remember the golden era back in the noughties when you might go out to the Big Tree on a Wednesday night and by Thursday lunchtime you had mortgage approval for 120% with some guy from Monaghan. You wouldn't even have a surname. But sadly, they're a lot stricter now, Bobby. So I went back teaching this year and I have to say, I do love it. Like, it's even great for mining material for the company.
Well, that's why, do you need to maybe... have another life outside of comedy to make your comedy not relevant, but to find new
relatable,
to find new sources of humour.
Absolutely. So I did, you know, I did go back teaching, and you know, I obviously was very funny when I went back the first day, because when you're teaching in Dingle, everyone knows everyone. So the first day I went into my fifth year, one of the fifth years turns to me and says, "Oh, Julie, how's the comedy going?" I said, "Well, oh, and obviously not too well. If I'm here with
you, have you done your homework?
So it is great for coming up with material and. Also, do you know, in all honesty, especially with the two kids and because my husband's also a comedian, it's good to have the steady income as well.
Good job.
Yeah.
But stay with us. Let's talk to Al Foran. Al, you're very welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hello, Bobby. How are you? All good. Yeah.
All good. Now, you started doing impressions. Tell me a little bit about how you got into this business.
I mean, for me, and I'm sure the likes of Mario, Oliver Callan, all the big impressionists in the country will tell you, that it starts off impersonating family members at family dues, whether it be communions, weddings, christenings, you name it, the whole lot. That's how I kind of started. And I suppose coupled with that, I watched a bit too much television when I was younger. I probably watched a few too many movies that were a little too, you know, that I wasn't probably allowed to watch at that age. But that's how I kind of started doing impressions, you know. It was...
And Al, other people's singing in the shower, you practice your impressions in the shower. Is that your place of creativity?
Yeah, it is, 100%. It is, or on the school runs as well, where my daughter is in the back looking at me like I'm, some sort of Egypt. But, you know, it's productive for me.
I think I heard you yesterday on Joe Duffy's Farewell. Was that correct?
Yes, I was. Yeah, I was. It was a great honour to be a part of it, and we had great fun. You know, Joe likes to throw the kitchen sink at me with regards to the impressions. You know, he just throws them at me one by one. So it was great fun.
Are you still doing Gordon Ramsay? I think I heard a couple of lines from him yesterday.
Yes, Bobby. Yes, Gordon Ramsay is definitely still intact. You know, the problem with Gordon Ramsay is, you know, you need to do him, you know, at late night gigs, because obviously he has quite a foul mouth, you know, so you can't really do him, you know, on daytime radio or television, you know, because...
stay with us, Al. I want to bring in Chris Kent. Chris, I haven't seen you for a number of years. How are you doing?
I'm very good, Bobby. How are you? Yeah, it's been a while. It's
all
been
good. Now, you're, Chris, I know you're an electrician as well, and I think during COVID, a bit like Julie, you looked for supplementary income back, and you took your old job back as an electrician in a pharmaceutical company, I believe. Is that right?
Exactly that, yeah. I went back for a couple of years, just over 2 years in the end. Yeah, just needed a steady income, and it just wasn't there at all, like, you know. And like Judy said there now, I found it great for mining more material. And I also sort of found it great to not be leaning on comedy so heavily financially. So I was able to enjoy the comedy more outside of the comedy that I was doing at the time, you know.
Yeah.
And
you're sort of, I presume all comedians are, but this observational comedy, which is where you're looking at, you know, everyday things, and you're able to see funny things about them. Does that mean that you never really switch off, Chris?
You know, that is a problem. Yeah, that is a problem. Really.
So you're always kind of look for the humor in kind of a, you know, going doing your grocery shopping or whatever it is, or.
That's it. Yeah. Once you keep it to yourself, like, you're not going around on your wedding day actively looking for stuff to, you know what I mean? Hide the notebook kind of thing. You never switch off, but I think that's just the way I always was anyway. Even before I was a comedian, I would have been very introverted, but I was always drinking everything in, you know what I mean? I was always sort of looking at the people around me, and I was fascinated at the way they were making each other laugh, you know? So I think I just learned how I've gotten something to channel it with now. So I'm not switched off, but I'm able to sort of churn material and turn it into something basically.
And are places like building sites good sort of foraging ground for humour?
Yeah, they can be. Yeah, they definitely can be. They're good. There's definitely a lot of characters there that you meet along the way, but. To be honest, like, it was more so just being able to not worry about comedy for a while, because I think creativity, like, the worst thing for creativity is taking comedy too seriously and trying too hard. And unfortunately, comedy can get a bit like that sometimes, and it can be a bit of a grind. And when it's kind of going hard, it can be a struggle to sort of keep the light side out and try to make everything funny, you know.
You also mentioned, Chris, that you can actually lose money in comedy, you know, if you're going to the Edinburgh Festival for a month and you're over there, you know, you've got to keep yourself and you have a lot of overheads that go with it. So it's not unlike other businesses in that scenario.
Yeah, and it's hard to justify to people, I think, especially when you get into comedy and you're sort of jumping into the car to drive to Belfast or something like that from Cork after work to do your 7 or 8 minutes, and you're not getting paid, and people will ask you questions. How long are you doing? All right. And how much are they giving you? And you're like, nothing. And then they can't get their head around it, rightly so. But you'll only understand it if you do comedy, you know? If you do comedy, you get the bug. And it just isn't about the money for so long. I think it's not about the money for so long that it's like, you know, it just makes it a lot easier. You're hooked to the comedy, really, to getting a laugh and to writing a new joke or writing a new show, like, you know.
Yeah.
That's the best part.
Back to you, Julie. When it comes to that, the insecurity around it, you've, as I say, you've sort of worked that out yourself. But in terms of your own creativity, writing new gags, coming up with new pieces of stand-up or whatever it is, what's the process around that?
Well, I mean, I think that, like, it does help as well living with a fellow comedian. So because my husband's a comedian, we probably bounce a lot of stuff off one another, which is probably a terrible habit.
But telling each other jokes?
Yeah,
and
there is always a bit of an argument who owns that joke, because someone will say, well, I gave the setup, and Fred will say, well, I gave the punchline. But no, I think it has to be based in real life. I mean, even as you were saying, I think even being back in school, I just have mined so much material from even being back in school and just having the crack with the kids. And, you know, it is lovely, because then you go out on stage and you've so much to talk about. Whereas I think when you reach the next stratosphere, it probably is a little bit harder to be relatable. You know, if you're saying the butler said the funniest thing to me the other day, you know, it's just not going to connect with people in the same way. And because obviously, you know, I talk mostly about, like, relationships, being a parent, like, you know, being in school, like, obviously everyone's been to school. Most people have been in a relationship of some sorts. So it does relate to, you know, it does relate to people, and people get it because that's what you want. I think a comedy audience, when people laugh, it's because they see themselves in your story. That's when the laugh comes. And that's why it's so rewarding.
Al, what about your own process? You're a podcaster and you've done a lot of podcasting. Where does that fit in around the I suppose, the business model of being a comedian?
Well, I would say if I'm doing any of the podcasting or presenting, I'd say about 80% of it is myself, and then, you know, 20% towards the end is the impressions, the comedy, you could say. But my approach to stand-up, obviously, it's very different to Julie and Chris, whereas I actually, like, I have to commend them because them and so many other comedians, they're up there by themselves. Yeah. I actually need assistance when I'm on stage. And I did the Kerry Comedy Club with Julie and Fred a couple of months ago, myself and Carl Spain. And Fred was a big help to me. And I was going through my script with Fred where I had all of my different characters in different categories. And Fred would be like the interviewer on stage with me. And I'd be bouncing off Fred. That's kind of my process. Now, I've done the other process where I've done it by myself as well on stage. And that's worked out fine for me too. You know, but I do enjoy that kind of formulaic set where it's kind of, I kind of view it as like a Parkinson interview back in the day when, you know, Parkinson's guests would, you know, bounce off them. That kind of, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, so you know? Work with someone else to bring your own impersonations and gags. So somebody's sort of guiding you through it. Yeah,
mainly. Yeah, but I have done it by myself before, and I've enjoyed that process too. But I just kind of like that setup a bit better with an MC.
Can I ask you about the sort of security or insecurity, Al, in terms of knowing where you're going to be next month, next 6 months, next year? Do you just get used to the unpredictability of it? Do you have to manage, obviously, things like your cash flow and that kind of things?
Yeah, you have to manage that, and you have to kind of, I suppose, unfortunately, you have to accept that uncertainty. And as time goes on, you definitely become a lot more used to it. I think what Chris was talking about as well, with kind of your having this tunnel vision sense of comedy as well, that can kind of be detrimental to you. Sometimes you do need to take a bit of time away, conserve your energy. And in doing that, your creativity comes back. And I find as well, you know, listen, I've had so many instances in my career, you know, over the last decade or so where, you know, there has been an air of uncertainty. But I think when your back's against the wall, that's when you're at your most creative. That's when you can come up with great ideas. Yes, there's definitely, you know, there's anxiety hanging over you with regards to what's next. But it also brings out the best side of you creatively, I think.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, that's definitely, during COVID, 100%, I had a lot of creative ideas during COVID. Which was an uncertain time for all of us, you know.
Absolutely. Chris, back to you. Social media, it's been a big part of your work over the years, but your latest show, Offline, it's not your latest show, but the show that you wrote is basically your relationship, is it not, with social media?
Yeah, it is the show that I'm touring now, so it is my latest show. So basically, like, after I went back to work for COVID, I did the work for about 2 years and was looking for a house and all that, and had the mortgages and just was going absolutely nowhere. And the busier I was getting in work, the gigs were coming back, it was getting really difficult. So my wife was very encouraging, and she said, just go back to comedy full time, because she has a full time job as well. So I went back at it full time, and I really focused online then. Before the last tour, and I just learned how to edit properly, and I was putting up videos every day for months and months, actually, and it kind of felt like it was going nowhere, but eventually it sort of snowballed, and I got a bit of a break essentially online, and it turned into a big huge tour, which is something I've always dreamed of doing, like, you know.
Great, well done.
And I've always kind of then at the same time been curious, because the thing is, it was brilliant and everything, and it was great fun, but I think I developed a far unhealthier relationship with my phone and with social media, and I was a little bit obsessed with how it was working and how other people were working it, and just little things like obsessively checking my tickets and all that, and not being able to put my phone down at all. So I sort of set myself a challenge because I needed to write a new show, and I felt like I couldn't sit down for 10 minutes without being distracted. I felt like my attention span just absolutely disappeared, you know. So I had always been curious, and I had the idea years ago. So at the end of the last tour, I gave up the internet for about 8.5 weeks is what it was. So I started handing my phone over, and I got a Nokia phone, so I had no access. I'm very handy with Snake now. I've got a great Snake score again.
Do you know, Chris, I'm just listening there. I'm going to get my husband to hand over his phone for 8.5 weeks as well. I think that would be a great social experiment, Chris. Yeah. This has given me the green light.
Niamh took my phone. My wife took my phone for 8.5 weeks. And
I love that.
I had no internet whatsoever. So I was just, the main point of it was, A, see if I can survive without it. I mean, just in everyday life, I can tell you it's actually really hard. Just regards to, you know, printing off boarding cards and booking accommodation and even maps. Like, I have a physical book of maps that I had to get around the place because I had some gigs that were kind of difficult to get to.
You were having to send us faxes, Chris. Do you remember that? I got a fax from Chris. Faxes,
yeah. No way.
It was 1998 all over again, Bobby.
It was so cool, though. But I was the only one in 1998. That was kind of the problem. Do you know what I mean? I was the only one there. Everybody else has moved on. Do you know what I mean? Like, your granddad went to school in no shoes, like, apparently, but he's not turning up to the family brunch in his bare feet now. Like, I kind of felt like I was kind of standing out a little bit. But yeah. But I tell you, it was unbelievable, though, for creativity and for being able to sit down. And
can I ask another question? I wanted to know about dealing with hecklers, because I love this is where I see comedians at their sharpest. Al, have you any particular tricks around dealing with hecklers?
Just do Joe Pesci.
That generally deals with them, does it?
I know, it brings them back on side, really. I have a friendly relationship with the hecklers, you know. But it is, yeah, no, it's usually a Pesci thing. Or Roy Keane works sometimes.
I'd say he does, yeah.
Of course, you know, you're staring at them, you know, you got something to say about it. You know,
very good.
Just give us give us a hug, you know. Point shouting about it. You paid the money to be here. Better enjoy it or walk home.
What about you, Chris? In terms of the hecklers,
I think they're rare enough, to be quite honest with you. Like, you know, people have this big fear about hecklers, but they're so rare. They're so rare. And when I do get to have to deal with them, I sort of just try and take it in the moment and see if I can think of something funny on my feet. I do, and if not, I'll kind of open up a conversation with them, and inevitably you will find something funny.
Yeah.
You know, they're inevitably they're usually a bit under the influence as well, and they're not used to having a microphone.
And they're usually a family member. That's what I find. That's what I hate about the local gigs. It's always a cousin getting involved, to be honest.
Over familiarity.
Yeah. Thanks very much, guys. Really great to talk to you all. Keep doing what you're doing. It's great that you're all sticking it out, doing really good things creatively. Thanks to Al Forn, Julie J, and Chris Kent. Best of luck on the comedy.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.